Everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today we have Triggs. Triggs, it's a pleasure having you here today.
Yeah, thanks. It's awesome to be here. I'm excited to chat about data and Web3 and where the future's heading.
Exactly. Really looking forward to this conversation. And like, you have so much, especially the things that we're going to cover regarding DAOs and governance and all the exciting things you learned there throughout your years of experience in on-chain governance and DAOs. Go ahead and actually give an introduction of yourself to our audience, because I might not do the best justice over there. So the podium is yours.
Yeah, sure. So I've been down around for going on 5 years now. I've been in some of the classic kind of investment DAO structures, and everything from that to now I'm working more in the grant ecosystem. I've been helping the Octant community with their council structure, working with projects like Coordinate to build council structures. So most of my focus has been in that realm of like, how does a DAO actually work? How do you structure it? How does the organizational practices develop in that decentralized kind of way?
Yeah, those are some excellent points that we're also going to focus on today. But like, one point that you actually said previously is like, after years of working in DAOs, right now even more questions are starting to come up. So before we narrow down and go into like the specifics and cover the specifics, I'd love to hear your perspective on the DAO space today. Like, where are we at the moment? Because there's so many things going on and happening, especially right now when we have like AI delegates and AI this, AI that, automation. Where do you think we are, and where are we actually headed in the DAO space, like, to make it a bit clearer for people, because there's so much stuff out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. The DAO concept is kind of contentious just from the definition of the term. So I always like to kind of start out with, well, defining it in how I see, what I see DAOs to mean. So breaking down the words, like decentralized, it really simply is summed up as no single points of failure. The autonomous part of a DAO gets a little bit more complicated. I define it as self-directed actions, not gated by a central authority. And then moving to the organization standpoint, it's a little bit more clear. My favorite term is individual agents cooperating for a collective purpose. So when you have this framework of no single points of failure, self-directed actions that aren't gated by a central authority, and then individual agents cooperating for a collective purpose, and everything expands out from that. But the problem that we have is everyone that's participated in a DAO up until this point has probably been rugged in one way or another. And I think that comes from a misunderstanding of what a DAO is. And people tend to think of it in terms of holding and trading a governance token, and that's their path to like generating profit and value from participating in the DAO through that that governance token. But what that results in is, in my opinion, is that merit and actual value that's contributed is overshadowed by the narratives of hype that drive speculation around that token. So when you look at it from that perspective, every pump has its dump. So projects that are driving this narrative of hype around a token to speculate on the value of that token is just inevitably setting up a structure so that those who profit the most are the ones that are the most willing to extract value from the organization. And those that are most willing to stay and contribute value without compensation are the ones that get taken advantage of. And that's the cycle that we've seen in DAOs over and over again. So with this perspective of how DAOs are operating today, it's easy to see how collective decision making isn't at the forefront of DAO design. Instead, we have plutocratic and populist games that are designed to reward, these cabals of powerful elites that are colluding to maintain control of the organization. And there's the hype train of charismatic leaders that create these influencer armies that capture the narrative of the org. And all of that goes against the principles of what a DAO should be.
And I mean, those are some excellent points. But on the other side, like, we have that happening in the world today, where it's also a lot of DAOs are pretty much focused purely on pure plutocratic, and whoever has the most tokens has the most influence. But on the other side of that point, what I would ask you is, like, practically, what are our alternatives from that in that case? Because there has been discussions about this and about that, but what is really the directions where we should take DAOs, or at least experiment with that direction in order to see if it makes sense to continue down this path or not? Because in theory, DAOs are a perfect way to do something. It's just that in practice, it proves a bit different.
Exactly. You nailed it. In practice, it proves different. And that's the struggle that we're facing in this ecosystem with the experimentation we have in DAOs. People that are experimenting in these value-driven perspectives aren't the ones that are generating the hype and getting the attention space, that is popular in the Web2 hype-driven kind of economy. So in the experience that I've had over the years and trying to figure out how to do exactly what you just asked, I've kind of transitioned to thinking of it in terms of the technical foundation that's necessary. Like, what is it about blockchains that actually makes this theory of DAOs possible in a way that wasn't possible before? And so I've kind of crafted this framework that I call the six pillars of technological innovation that I think are necessary, that need to exist in order for us to actually pursue this, this promise of Web3, where people can be in control of their data and control of their identity, and they're not being, held hostage by some centralized gatekeeper who actually owns all the value that they're producing with this digital identity. So just to kind of briefly go through these six pillars, the first one is self-sovereign identities. Individuals need to be empowered to actually control their own identity and data on the digital space. The second point is secure communication. There has to be a communication framework that's both open and accessible, meaning that people can't be excluded from it, but also it has to be secure, meaning that it can't be manipulated by outside forces. Social engagement is another pillar that I think is essential in today's global modern society. We have to embrace the online and the async nature of social engagement in order for communities to be able to fully, participate in the project. And then the next stage, building off of that, is collaborative tools. We have to be utilizing tools that foster this collaborative work so that it breaks people out of the silos. When everything is kept within a walled garden and everybody's building these black boxes, then there is no collaboration. And so the mind share doesn't grow and expand with the collective decision-making process. And then building off of that, again, like all of these pillars continue to build off of each other. Not one single one of them can stand on their own. The next pillar is knowledge management. And this is where we have to promote autonomous access to insights and expertise, again, referencing the concept of like the walled gardens and the black boxes that are so common in the Web2 ecosystem. In these centralized agents that currently are the gatekeepers of all of the digital data and identity space in on the internet, they control and own all of that knowledge and that expertise that's generated. I mean, you've seen that with AI, like the most powerful AI tools are built from these organizations that own all of this user data, and the knowledge isn't being spread. It's more important for people to retain their knowledge in small circles and not let it get shared. You know, the free exchange of information actually erodes the power of the centralized agents that are trying to control data. And so by making knowledge management more autonomous and more open, it erodes that control that they have over the system. And then the final pillar is decentralized consensus. We have to encourage reputation-driven governance, and we have to redefine what trust-based decision-making means in a trustless execution environment. And it's a totally like opposite perspective of the Web2 system, where trust is... that we don't have trustless execution. We always have to trust that some entity is going to enforce the action that is being promised, by the centralized entity that controls the situation.
Yeah, those are some excellent points of it. My question on that is, like, so these six pillars of really, like, the six core pillars of a decentralized organization, from, like, self-sovereign identities, secure communication, engagement, collaborative tools, knowledge management, and decentralized consensus. On the knowledge management aspect, especially as you mentioned, like we have right now, and it's quite obvious, in Web2, these agents that keep vast amounts of data. But one could argue even that in Web3, or like in crypto in general, even though it's decentralized, some organizations are using this exact same way to create something there, just leverage it for profit, but still kind of have it as a centralized, practically use decentralization as marketing rather than a technology. So my question over there is, like, because actually my question would be, how would these six pillars really, first of all, interplay with each other to create a truly effective decentralized organization? And on the other aspect is, like, what can we do now, or what already exists out there that maybe we should look into to ensure that not that something different happens than the same thing that happened in Web2?
I think that it's important to look at the basis of the Web2 ecosystem to understand why it is so successful and powerful. And by answering that question, then we can start looking at how we can do something differently that helps us achieve a different value structure that we're seeking with this Web3 movement. Because you're right, it's so easy for the exact same system to capture Web3. The blockchains aren't some silver bullet that just inherently solves this problem. What it does is it gives us the tools for us to be able to address the problem in a different way. So some of the features that I think blockchains enable that will power these pillars of infrastructure are composability. This is one of the most powerful features of blockchain that gets ignored in the majority of projects that are built today. Even projects that are trying to build self-sovereign identities, they aren't building them in a composable way. And what that composability means is that individuals can't be held hostage by the organization that is issuing the reputation or data to the individual. They need to be able to freely take that data that is produced about their identity and do whatever they want with it. Take it to a different project, take it to a different ecosystem. It goes with them wherever they go, and they're in control of who can use it and who can't use it. Without that, then we're just right back to the same Web2 system where, you know, people are being held hostage by the issuers of their data and reputation.
Yeah, it's
and another feature, like, of blockchains. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
All right. Continuing on with that, another feature of blockchains that enables this is immutability. It's a term that I think is misunderstood to some degree. People think of immutability as like absolute permanence. There's 100% no way it can change. Like, Bitcoin has an immutable record of, you know, its issuance cycle and the qualities and properties of the Bitcoin token. It's not entirely true to say that it can't be changed. It has been changed. It's been very controversial. There's been an entire fork of the Bitcoin chain. And that's an example of decentralized control over an immutable product. Immutability just means that it can't easily be changed. It can't be changed without the consensus of everyone who has, you know, a vested interest in whatever it is that, you know, is being built. And that's where it comes in with blockchains, having the ability to restrict that no central agent can enforce change. It can be changed through consensus of the entire distributed, you know, organization, but no individual centralized agency can enforce that change. And then additional aspects are the, you know, transparency. Everything that happens on the blockchain is easily visible. So execution can be monitored by all of the individuals that are you know, involved in the organization. There is no just like trusting that the corporate execs are actually executing things the way that they're promoting that they're executing things. So that transparency is really crucial. But the other side of that is privacy. From an individual perspective, no individual should be forced to reveal their entire identity just to be able to participate in one particular action. If you want to, you know, vote on something on chain, you shouldn't have to reveal your entire wallet's history of transactions to the entire world. You should be able to choose, you know, what part of your identity you think is relevant to go along with, you know, casting that vote on governance. So that's an aspect of blockchains that is possible. We have all kinds of different privacy enabled, you know, tooling blockchains, but it's not popular. Most blockchain projects are built without any privacy whatsoever. Most wallets that we use have absolutely no privacy whatsoever. And then the last point that I had was, we've already kind of covered, but it's trustless execution, right? And like there's no reliance on a centralized authority to enforce execution. But when you look at most DAOs, any kind of on-chain proposal that has a transaction payload that's gonna make some change to the blockchain, most people voting on that governance proposal don't know how to read the code. They don't know how to evaluate what it's actually going to do. And so even though there's trustless execution in that, you know that once that governance proposal is approved, it's going to get executed, you're still just trusting that whoever designed that proposal has, you know, presented themselves honestly and straightforwardly. And you're just trusting that the transaction payload was, you know, constructed properly. There weren't errors in it. There's no verification step. So, you know, these are aspects of blockchains that enable these pillars, but it doesn't guarantee, like, it has to be intentionally designed.
Yeah, there's so many different aspects, and I would love to touch a bit more on the topic of privacy that you mentioned over there, and the data and how it impacts really the. I know you talk about this extensively in one of your articles. Like how it impacts extensively the attention economy nowadays, which is practically, in what you say, a dark loop. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, and like if you could elaborate a bit more on your thoughts there.
Yeah, I like the term the dark loop of the attention economy, because when you break down the value flow that is occurring in the Web2 ecosystem around this attention economy. And just to like expand on that term, calling it the attention economy is basically because of the ad-driven funding nature of Web2. Everything is driven by ads. And so for the advertiser, what's valuable to them is that people's attention is focused on their advertisement when it comes up on their screen in whatever method. And if you look at the evolution of these social media applications like Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, now X, they're all designed to figure out how to trick you into watching ads as much as possible. And we've seen the amount of ads increase on these platforms year after year. And the tricks that they play of like how they put the buttons on the screen so that you accidentally click the ad instead of clicking the action that you want. Like these are all little tools that these platforms have developed because it maximizes the attention economy. It doesn't maximize any kind of value creation, and it doesn't reward individuals in any kind of meaningful way. All it does is exploits their attention so that they can drive ad revenue. And some people can profit from that by, you know, gaining enough attention space in the attention economy that advertisers will, the distributors of advertisements will throw some bones to people to motivate them. Like, oh, look, this person's getting rich because they're a major influencer. This is the goal that you should all be, you know, chasing after. But the reality is that the value flow never makes it down to the consumers. It's a completely extractive system that is designed to take all of the value that consumers produce and funnel it up to the distributors and advertisers who are benefiting, you know, from this. And that's the dark loop. And when you start adding into it the AI component of it, where now the distributors of the ads are also capturing all of the data that is being produced by users and content creators and advertisers all together. And these distributors are now being able to produce these AI tools based on the, you know, the content of that data that they've captured. And now they're able to monetize that directly, which completely cuts the content creators out of the loop. And consumers are still being extracted from, and no value continues to flow down to consumers. And now very little value is flowing back to content creators because the AI tools are able to fulfill both of those roles. And now it skips, you know, the humans are being cut out of the system.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually. And but another question over there, because, and that's that dark loop has been going on for years, and like with these AI tools and everything, and one could argue, at least, like, to what extent is that even sustainable? Because aren't we at one point going to reach a actual point where it just doesn't make sense for the consumers, which we all are, to just continue consuming more? And just consume and consume and consume more of the same things. When it comes to like decentralized organizations and actually even the six pillars that we just talked about earlier, and that like the creator economy in general, like how do you see that interplaying with each other? And like even there are a lot of conversations about on-chain creators out there. But like, how do you see it from your perspective, the future of this attention economy? And like, maybe, like, do you see that dark loop breaking soon or like evolving into something completely different? Because in the end, it's a loop.
Yeah, you're right. It's honestly kind of scary thinking about. It's something that has kept me up at night, which is why I've written somewhat extensively about it. And why I'm dedicating, you know, the rest of this year to continue diving down that rabbit hole to really explore those questions, because it brings my mind to the decentralized accelerationism concept that was started from Vitalik's post that was kind of a reaction to the techno optimism. And I really like the point of realizing that like the future is not guaranteed to be anything. The future could be dark and scary and dystopian, or the future could be light and encouraging and utopian. But the path that we take is decided by each individual step that we all collectively make. And so if we choose to keep taking steps down the path of feeding the loop of the attention economy, then we inevitably will follow the spiral down to the dystopian future. And is there a possibility to go so far down that path that we can't escape? I don't know, but I don't want to find out, because there's a different path that we can choose to take every step of the way that leads us away from that, you know, inevitable future or seemingly inevitable future.
One thing I'll say over there, which I've said even previously, is like, where oftentimes we're also so much focused on like what is happening right now and how it will impact the future. But what if for the past years we were already in that dystopian future quite deep, and maybe we're just starting to get out of it bit by bit right now with all these new tools and stuff that is coming out?
I absolutely agree with that. When you study the history of the cypherpunk movement, and it goes all the way back to the 80s. This concept, all these concepts that I talked about today were founded in the 80s before the internet was even really a huge thing. But people that were exposed to this technology and saw the potential of it recognized that we were already captured by, you know, these centralized forces. And that's why they were pushing so hard as punks to, you know, rage against that machine. And so I agree with you. I think that we've been already down this dark path and we are in the dystopian future. And that's why everything feels so discouraging when we try to push these, you know, value-driven concepts of the Web3 movement. But, you know, we are crawling out of that because we're continuing to build tools that align with the values of the six pillars that I identified. You know, I didn't invent those six pillars. That was just a result of me analyzing the cypherpunk movement and all of the values that have driven people to not accept this dystopian future that we live in.
Out of curiosity over there, like when it comes to like really working on the attention economy right now and the six pillars and all of that stuff. What are some projects or products or people actually in general that are really working towards that, getting out of that loop, getting out of that dark loop? And what are some innovative ways that you're seeing right now put in action, or at least put in experimentation at this point in time, that maybe you're quite optimistic about?
Yeah, I mean, there's, I'm hesitant to dive too deep into specific projects, because I don't want to feed the hype train in that regard. My perspective and goal with all of this work is to help build tools that empower people to evaluate projects on their own and make their own decisions about, you know, how they fit into these six pillars. You know, the mindset is, if we can develop this framework and we can elevate the context of the individual, then they don't have to rely on someone like me telling them which projects are good and which projects are bad. This is something that we can explore through collective decision making and collective analysis. You know, there are some projects that I think are doing a really great job. Just for example, like the Token Engineering Academy, they are doing amazing work with just helping empower people to understand how tokenomics work, which is a foundational component of all of this, you know, blockchain stuff that we're doing. Tokens are unavoidably a central theme. But knowing the difference between a good token and a bad token is almost impossible. You're always, to some degree, just trusting that someone smarter than you has evaluated it and determined that it's actually good. And so through elevating the context of the individuals through knowledge management, you know, it empowers people to make decisions for themselves when they look at a project and look at the token, the tokenomics of it. They have some framework to make that decision themselves instead of me telling them that it's good, because I honestly don't know. I have limited personal insight, and I don't want my opinions of what projects are good or bad to to color the scene too much, because I'm only one person with one perspective. There's, you know, I value the input of everyone else that I'm working with so much more than my own input, because they have different perspectives that aren't biased in the same way that my perspective is.
Yeah, on the other side over there, and I think that was an excellent answer. When it comes like to that collective decision making and everything, it's also like closely, even getting out of the dark loop of the attention economy, can also be quite closely connected with DAOs and how DAOs will impact that whole train, just by getting more engaged in that than practically by making collective decisions on things that actually make a difference to us.
Exactly. You know, one of the encouragements that I can make for people who are looking at projects and trying to evaluate if it's, you know, somebody working in a value aligned way or not, is just asking questions about those six pillars and seeing where it lands with that project. You know, is the token based on hype? Is it all about value and speculation? Because if people are speculating on a governance token, then it's probably not a very strong governance token. You know, maybe there's room for speculation on these kinds of tokens in the future, but if it's happening now before value's been built, then it's distracting from the core principles that should be enforced. And other things that you can look at are, you know, the knowledge management thing. Are governance proposals being put up that don't make sense to you? Like, most people that I've talked to in DAOs are pretty burnt out on governance, because when a proposal goes up, they're like, I don't really have any input on this. I'm not qualified to know. I'm just going to trust that the person who put this up knows best. And they kind of just go with whatever the centralized body of authority in that group decides. That's a red flag that project isn't very decentralized. Does it mean that it's a bad project? No, everything has to start out centralized. We're on this like progressive path of moving towards decentralization, but you can't just skip to the end. It has to be a step-by-step journey. And projects that are on that journey with us are ones that are going to be continually distributing authority to a broader group of people. And they're going to be sharing context around decisions that are being made to elevate community members into leaders. The goal for any decentralized organization should be that the current body of leaders can leave and the organization will continue in a value-aligned way. If the progress of a project or community is completely contingent on one or a small group of people, then it's not decentralized. Again, it has to start out that way, but if that small group of people is structuring it in a way where they maintain control as the project grows, then it's not a DAO. It's already been captured. So every DAO leader should have this mindset of, I will stop being a leader of this DAO someday and someone else will replace me. And so it changes the perspective from how do I enshrine my position in this organization to how do I enshrine my values into this organization so that my influence carries on past my direct involvement.
It's practically like, it's also from the perspective of working towards being replaceable. Like, how do I make myself replaceable in the most efficient way possible? Preferably without anyone having to replace me. Works automatically.
That's one of the things that I tell every DAO that I've joined when I, join a council for a DAO in my, application. I say that my goal is to not be on this council in the future. Yeah. Like, I want to join this council and help it grow so that I can leave this council and not carry the responsibility forward, but have others pick up the torch, because other people are going to know more than I do. I only know one small component of it and everyone else has got all the other pieces. So if we just rely on me or other people like me that are willing to step up early on in these DAOs, it's never going to grow beyond us. And I think that's very limiting. I don't want projects to be limited by my limitations.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually, which is really the type of thinking that also, I think that will get us to the next stage and the next stage after that, like as we continue building instead of staying and then stepping in the same place all the time. But Trix, one more question. Like, right now you're also moving from executing on DAOs to becoming more of a researcher. Like, I would love to hear more about what are you working on right now, because I know you're doing some really cool things with data and the things you can share up until this point. Like, I know it's still pretty early on.
Yeah, definitely. It's early stages are hard to really flesh out too much, but essentially my goals right now are to expand on the six pillars and take the experiences that I've had and share that knowledge in a way that embraces the values of those six pillars. So I'm exploring projects that are building, decentralized data solutions, and I'm exploring projects that are expanding self-sovereign identity into composable, primitives that we can take and use throughout the ecosystem. And as I'm exploring these tools, I'm using them with the people that I'm working with to try to kind of dog food the process of building this decentralized data set. And, there's a massive ecosystem of people that are all working in the same direction with these same goals. But everyone's still constrained to the silos of their realm of influence because we don't have these solutions in place that can break down those silos. So the main focus of the work that I'm trying to transition into is to not only get out there and find all the projects that are doing these things, but help them to connect with each other and build off of the work that each other is doing instead of replicating it in these individual silos and having it not necessarily break out into, the world. It's pointless to repeat the work that somebody else has already done when instead you could just build off of it. That's like the open source, the whole point of open source. So open sourcing data, I guess, is really the path forward.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing point over there. Is there anything else that I should have asked you right now that maybe we didn't really cover?
I had this little list of features of a DAO that I think is maybe a good kind of capstone to this conversation. Things that I think about that are important for DAOs to pursue. So one of the features is capture resistance. It needs to be hard for collusion to influence governance. This is something that we have not figured out how to do at all. In my opinion, all governance is influenced by collusion of some sort. Collusion doesn't always mean bad intentions, right? Good intentioned people can collude with each other to get the results that they want. And maybe it has a positive net sum, but it doesn't change the fact that it was achieved through collusion rather than through collaboration. Another feature is that it embraces change. The minority cannot maintain power over the majority. And so as people want things to change, the DAO must embrace that change. But it also must be revolutionary. And I say that to mean that the majority cannot silence the voice of the minority. And those two elements are very contradictory, but also for a DAO to be successful, it has to embrace both. The minority must be able to be heard and seen and have a voice in the organization. And then beyond that, there needs to be permissionless on and offboarding. If access to the organization is gated, that gating creates opportunities for collusion and gatekeeping and all of that. But it also must be permissionless to offboard. If you can't leave an organization and take the value and reputation that you built with you, then that organization has you held hostage. And I also think that it must be impact driven. This is something that we're seeing all over in the grant ecosystem right now. There's a massive emphasis on impact. And, you know, grants are basically, well, grants in this ecosystem are just DAOs, right? That's what we're trying to build with grants. A DAO basically is a grant mechanism, capital allocation. And in order for capital allocation to be effective, it has to be driven by actual impact. If we're just deciding on how to allocate capital based on vibes and influencer hype, then we're not actually going to accomplish the collective purpose that the organization was formed around, unless that collective purpose was to create an influencer-based army. I mean, but, and then the final point that I love to throw in here because of the nature of the technological ecosystem that we're in, I think that one of the most important features of DAOs that we need to embrace is low code, low configuration. If operating a DAO requires a computer science degree, then that's a barrier to entry that gatekeeps people from being able to access it. And that's something that, you know, we're a long ways away from that. But as developers and as builders, we need to keep that mindset in the forefront of our minds of building solutions that are low code, low configuration, so that the user experience is accessible to everyone, not just computer science majors.
Yeah. That's an excellent point, actually. And that's a point for DAOs, but also for pretty much the majority of the blockchain space at this point. Especially like if we want to have the impact that a lot of people are actually striving for, has to be made a bit easier. Because even crypto natives struggle a lot of times.
Yeah. I've been working in tech my entire life. And I mean, I started working on computers before the internet was really a big thing. And I feel completely just useless most of the time trying to figure out blockchain stuff because the technology stuff is just like, woo, right over my head. And so I can't even imagine people who don't have a massive technological background trying to enter this space and figuring out the complexities of blockchain wallets and transactions. I mean, even just trying to read the blockchain, even if you're, you know, using some block explorer that has some sort of like, you know, interpretation tool or whatever. I mean, it's so complicated and difficult to navigate. The idea that people can actually, you know, self-govern blockchain activity is pretty impossible.
Yeah, it seems pretty far off as well at this point. But we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. Triggs, it was a pleasure having you here today, and thank you for sharing all this amazing insights and topics.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Sorry if it was just like a lot of content, but I'm coming into this year with just like a strong desire to share knowledge. And so, you know, I think that's an important aspect of this that gets overlooked. We're so driven to push the technology forward that we forget we have to share the knowledge that we're gathering along the way.
Yeah, to actually combine the path, even that, because a lot of us might even walk the same path, which is again going to the question of DAOs, practically. We should just collaborate a bit more.